history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price has been paid for our freedom. And through that process, we always come out ahead. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. The final year of World War II was so eventful. There have been lots of significant 75th anniversaries, but perhaps the one most worthy of celebrating is the one marked this week, 75 years since the most deadly global conflict in history officially came to an end with the signing of the Instruments of Surrender aboard the battleship Missouri in Tokyo Bay. That was on September 2, 1945. That historic ship, of course, is now anchored in Pearl Harbor, not far at all from the USS Arizona Memorial, the most visible reminder of the tragic day that drew the United States into World War II. Without that U.S. involvement, the tyrannical forces seeking to dominate the globe would not have been deterred, and 75 years ago this week, people everywhere were relieved that the war that had lasted 4 years for Americans, even longer for those in other parts of the world, was over. The official 75th anniversary commemoration of that long-awaited moment will take place on the Missouri. Organizers had been working hard to arrange to fly dozens of World War II veterans free of charge to Hawaii for the event. As recently as last week, that plan was still moving forward. But as COVID-19 cases have risen on the islands, the difficult decision was made to cancel all travel but still hold a series of events for the anniversary, limiting in-person attendance to veterans who call Hawaii their home. Later on, we'll hear from the executive director of the committee charged with making that special event a reality, and he'll tell us how we can follow along in a live stream on September 2nd. But there are some pretty compelling things for us to listen to before we get to that. We're going to hear what Americans heard on the radio 75 years ago. And with the lens of three quarters of a century of history, I think you'll find it interesting to hear how President Harry Truman, General Douglas MacArthur, and Admiral Chester Nimitz viewed the years that preceded that historic day, as well as what they envisioned for the future and what they thought mattered most. Perhaps you'll even find it relevant to things America and the world are facing today. Because hindsight is 2020, even here in 2020, we know that the surrender ceremony in Tokyo Bay came off largely without a hitch. But there was no guarantee that would be the case, and Allied forces were on alert in case anything would happen. One sailor who helped us understand that dynamic on this program was Mike Wanty, who had by that time survived quite a few close calls on the destroyer USS Lardner.
I think for about 3 months we went back and forth out to sea from Tokyo, and the planes bombarded Tokyo and all around there. And then the war was ended. We were given the honor to be the first ones in Tokyo Harbor.
Your ship?
Yeah, which I didn't think was the best honor. Our captain was smart enough. We went to general quarters, and we had those guns pointed, loaded. There was two Japanese destroyers on either side of us, and he was nervous. We didn't know what they were going to do. They had done kamikaze.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they try and blow up that ship? So we never stopped for about 2 days. We went around and around in the harbor because we were afraid of these one-man submarines, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Was that before they signed the surrender in
yes.
Tokyo Bay?
Yeah.
So you guys went in to kind of make sure that was safe.
That's right, exactly.
So you were expendable.
Yes.
You were the ones that didn't care if you got
we
blown
always
up.
Always were.
You're a destroyer.
Right from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Always were. We were lucky we never got hit. The lucky Lardner.
So you guys get word that Japan is going to surrender?
Yeah, we were at sea, and everybody cheered.
But they tell you, you're the first ones in.
We had to go pick up a few of the battle wagons, but we were the lead ship.
Uh-huh.
And we went on in. The battle wagons in the Missouri followed quite a few days after. We were at anchor then, and they anchored very close to us. So I could, with my binoculars, watch everything that was going on.
So you guys circle the harbor. You've got your guns out and all that. You make sure everything's fine. And then you drop anchor and wait for the bigger ships and the dignitaries.
Right.
And so you said you could watch through your binoculars. So were you looking that way when all the bigwigs got on there?
Oh, sure. And then after it was signed, then we had to go pick up prisoners of war. We went north and picked up some prisoners of war, brought them back. By that time, hospital ship was anchored in Tokyo Bay, and we would deliver them.
That was the late Mike Wanty from the destroyer USS Lardner, the first American ship in Tokyo Bay before history was made there 75 years ago. If you happened to visit Julesburg, Colorado this week, you would find a former mayor of that city who has done a phenomenal job of preserving history through his old Ford garage and museum, not to mention the World War II uniforms and memorabilia he displays next door at what used to be the Opera House there. Lee Kaiser just celebrated his 95th birthday, and the instructions Lee and his fellow sailors aboard the destroyer USS Wilson carried 75 years ago in Tokyo Bay underscore that unease you heard Mike Wanty describe.
At the end of the war, when the USS Missouri went into the surrender, we were in the area patrolling. Our order was to, during the ceremony for the surrender, that in case any Vogue Japanese pilot, they didn't want to surrender, shoot them down immediately, but shoot anybody else down. Any other plane in the area, hit them so that they wouldn't fly into the Missouri. And that was our job.
Fortunately, they didn't have to shoot down any enemy planes on September 2nd, 1945. Lee Kaiser would spend the next month on the island of Chichijima, tracking down the remains of downed American pilots whose livers had been eaten by their Japanese captors. Those captors later executed for war crimes as a result of some of the evidence Lee Kaiser and his crew compiled. The crowd on the battleship Missouri on September 2nd, 1945, included some newly liberated prisoners of war like Bill Sanchez, who just turned 102 and will follow the anniversary from his home in Southern California. But even as peace was proclaimed and the surrender complete, other prisoners still hadn't tasted freedom yet. Such was the case for a man who would become good friends with Sanchez in his final years. Jack Schwartz had been captured on Guam on the second day of the war. Had the fighting lasted into the fall or winter of 1945, he likely wouldn't have survived at the Roku Roshi prison camp.
The war was over August the 14th. But we were up to the camp, and the Japanese officers in charge of the camp came in and said, hostilities have ceased. And he and the guards just walked off and left us. There was no place we could go.
So you prisoners were all alone up there? No guards, no Japanese?
That's correct, but where are you going to go? So we painted a big POW on the roof of the barracks, and it wasn't until, I'm pretty sure it was at least 2 weeks before we saw a B-29 fly way, way above us. And 2 hours later, the parachutes were dropping out of the cab full of food. Boy, we all got crazy, throwing up all over the place, eating too much. But why not? Finally, a group of Army people came up, including nurses. And this is amusing, too. The first thing they did was spray us with DDT.
Kill all the lice?
Lice and fleas, stuff, bed bugs. We had them all. And, of course, they wouldn't do it now, but it did get rid of it anyway. And then there was, I didn't mark the date. I used to keep a diary, but I've lost it. But there was sometime about September the 8th when they finally came up with trucks and took us down to the railroads. And we took the railroad to Yokohama. There they separated out the Army and the Navy, and they put the Navy people on board the U.S. Iowa, which was there, and just stayed there overnight. And we were still in rags. And they gave us uniforms. They wore cappy uniforms then. And the next day they flew us out. So we get on the plane to fly out. The last thing I did before I got out was spit on the ground. And we flew for about a half an hour over Tokyo. All you could see was completely burned out. And then we came back and landed because one of the motors was no good.
Boy, you talk about a letdown after 4 years as a prisoner and your plane ride home has to go back to where you started.
Exactly. Anyhow, we took off again and flew back to Guam. What a difference, because instead of a little shabby island, there were airfields there, all kinds of things. And this is another funny one. They took us to the Naval Hospital. You'll never guess who was in charge. It was one of the Navy nurses who was captured with us. Because the Navy nurses were sent home with the ambassador in May of 42. And here she was back on Guam again as the chief nurse. Of course, it was nice knowing somebody.
So VJ Day in mid-August didn't mean everyone was out of the woods, and not even that formal surrender on September 2nd wrapped things up for prisoners like Jack Schwartz, who hadn't been liberated yet. But the significance of what took place on the USS Missouri 75 years ago was underscored for millions of Americans listening to some of these very radio stations you're listening to right now by one of Missouri's native sons, our 33rd president, Harry Truman.
My fellow Americans, Supreme Allied Commander General MacArthur and Allied representatives on the battleship Missouri in Tokyo Bay. The thoughts and hopes of all America, indeed of all the civilized world, are centered tonight on the battleship Missouri. There, on that small piece of American soil, anchored in Tokyo Harbor, the Japanese have just officially laid down their arms. They have signed terms of unconditional surrender. 4 years ago, the thoughts and fears of the whole civilized world were centered on another piece of American soil, Pearl Harbor. The mighty threat to civilization which began there is now laid at rest. It was a long road to Tokyo and a bloody one. We shall not forget Pearl Harbor. The Japanese militarists will not forget the USS Missouri. The evil done by the Japanese warlords can never be repaired or forgotten. But their power to destroy and kill has been taken from them. Their armies, and what is left of their navy, are now impotent. To all of us, there comes first a sense of gratitude to Almighty God, who sustained us and our allies in the dark days of grave danger, who made us to grow from weakness into the strongest fighting force in history, and who has now seen us overcome the forces of tyranny that sought to destroy his civilization. God grant that in our pride of this hour, we may not forget the hard tasks that are still before us, that we may approach these with the same courage, zeal, and patience with which we faced the trials and problems of the past 4 years. Our first thoughts, of course, thoughts of gratefulness and deep obligation, go out to those of our loved ones who have been killed or maimed in this terrible war. On land and sea and in the air, American men and women have given their lives so that this day of ultimate victory might come and assure the survival of a civilized world. No victory can make good their loss. We think of those whom death in this war has hurt, taking from them fathers, husbands, sons, brothers and sisters whom they love. No victory can bring back the faces they long to see. Only the knowledge that the victory, which these sacrifices have made possible, will be wisely used, can give them any comfort. It is our responsibility, ours, the living, to see to it that this victory shall be a monument worthy of the dead who died to win it. All millions of men and women in our armed forces and merchant marines, all over the world, who, after years of sacrifice and hardship and peril, have been spared by Providence from harm. We think of all the men and women and children who, during these years, have carried on at home in lonesomeness and anxiety and fear. Our thoughts go out to the millions of American workers and businessmen, to our farmers and miners, to all those who have built up this country's fighting strength and who have shipped to our allies the means to resist and overcome the enemy. Our thoughts go out to our civil servants and to the thousands of Americans who, at personal sacrifice, have come to serve in our government during these trying years. To the members of the Selective Service Boards and Ration Boards, to the Civilian Defense and Red Cross workers, to the men and women in the USO and in the entertainment world, to all those who have helped in this cooperative struggle to preserve liberty and decency in the world. We think of our departed gallant leader, Franklin D. Roosevelt, defender of democracy, architect of world peace and cooperation. And our thoughts go out to our gallant allies in this war, to those who resisted the invaders, to those who were not strong enough to hold out, but who, nevertheless, kept the fires of resistance alive within the souls of their people, to those who stood up against great odds and held the line until the United Nations together were able to supply the arms and the men with which to overcome the forces of evil. This is a victory of more than arms alone. This is a victory of liberty over tyranny. From our war plants rolled the tanks and planes which blasted their way to the heart of our enemy. From our shipyards sprang the ships which bridged all the oceans of the world for our weapons and supplies. From our farms came the food and fiber for our armies and navies and for our allies in all the corners of the earth. From our mines and factories came the raw materials and the finished products, which gave us the equipment to overcome our enemies. But back of it all were the will and spirit and determination of a free people who know what freedom is and who know that it is worth whatever price they had to pay to preserve it. It was the spirit of liberty which gave us our armed strength and which made our men invincible in battle. We now know that that spirit of liberty, the freedom of the individual, and the personal dignity of man are the strongest and toughest and most enduring forces in all the world. And so on VJ Day, we take renewed faith and pride in our own way of life. We have had our day of rejoicing over this victory. We have had our day of prayer and devotion. Now let us set aside VJ Day as one of renewed consecration to the principles which have made us the strongest nation on earth and which, in this war, we have striven so mightily to preserve. Those principles provide the faith, the hope, and the opportunity which help men to improve themselves and their lot. Liberty does not make all men perfect, nor all society secure, but it has provided more solid progress and happiness and decency for more people than any other philosophy of government in history. And this day has shown again that it provides the greatest strength and the greatest power which man has ever reached. We know that under it we can meet the hard problems of peace which have come upon us. A free people with free allies who can develop an atomic bomb can use the same skill and energy and determination to overcome all the difficulties ahead. Victory always has its burdens and its responsibilities as well as its rejoicing. But we face the future and all its dangers with great confidence and great hope. America can build for itself a future of employment and security. Together with the United Nations, it can build a world of peace founded on justice, fair dealing, and tolerance. As President of the United States, I proclaim Sunday, September the 2nd, 1945, to be VJ Day, the day of the formal surrender of Japan. It is not yet the day for the formal proclamation of the end of the war, nor of the cessation of hostility, but it is a day which we Americans shall always remember as a day of retribution, as we remember that other day, the day of infamy. From this day we move forward. We move toward a new era of security at home. With the other United Nations, we move toward a new and better world of cooperation, of peace, and international goodwill. God's help has brought us to this day of victory. With His help, we will attain that peace and prosperity for ourselves and all the world in the years ahead.
President Harry Truman addressing the nation 75 years ago as World War II officially came to an end. Even in the wake of that incredible victory and the crucial unity of purpose in this country that produced it, there were severe inequities, wrongs that needed to be righted, and historians today agree that Truman deserves credit for addressing them. In July 1946, in what Japanese Americans refer to now as the Day of Affirmation, the Nisei veterans of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team marched down Constitution Avenue to the ellipse of the White House, and President Truman decorated their colors with the Presidential Unit Citation. It was an acknowledgement by Truman not only of the unsurpassed courage of the 442, Americans of Japanese ancestry fighting while many of their families remained behind barbed wire back home, but also of their loyalty, of their value, of the reality that they were just as American as anyone else. 2 years after that, Truman would issue Executive Order 9981, abolishing discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, or national origin in the U.S. Armed Forces. World War II had provided a canvas on which those Japanese Americans and also over a million African American servicemen and women, even in a segregated military, had demonstrated their ability, their bravery, their loyalty, and in so doing, exposed the foolishness of racial prejudice. It's time for our first break, but when we come back, more of what you would have heard on the radio 75 years ago this week, from General Douglas MacArthur and Admiral Chester Nimitz aboard the USS Missouri. And we'll hear more about what will happen on that historic battleship on the 75th anniversary of that formal surrender. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.
This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, in a week in which we'll mark 75 years since the battleship USS Missouri became the site of the formal surrender of Imperial Japan that ended the deadliest conflict the world had ever seen. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from the man in charge of the 75th anniversary commemoration that will take place on the Missouri at Pearl Harbor on September 2nd. 75thww2commemoration.org is the official website. I have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and you'll be able to follow a live stream of the activities in Hawaii wherever you happen to be this week. After collecting every signature on the instruments of surrender 75 years ago, General Douglas MacArthur stepped up to a microphone on the battleship Missouri to share some words that remain pretty fascinating to hear in 2020. It had been 3.5 years since MacArthur and his family had escaped Corregidor, vowing to return to the Philippines where thousands of Americans had been captured by the Japanese. Here are the words General MacArthur spoke from Tokyo Bay on September 2, 1945, followed by the remarks of Admiral Chester Nimitz.
My fellow countrymen, today the guns are silent. A great tragedy has ended. A great victory has been won. The skies no longer rain death. The seas bear only commerce. Men everywhere walk upright in the sunlight. The entire world lies quietly at peace. The holy mission has been completed. And in reporting this to you, the people, I speak for the thousands of silent lips forever stilled among the jungles and the beaches and in the deep waters of the Pacific which mark the way. I speak for the unnamed brave millions homeward bound to take up the challenge of that future which they did so much to salvage from the brink of disaster. As I look back on the long, tortuous trail from those grim days of Bataan and Corregidor, when an entire world lived in fear, when democracy was on the defensive everywhere, when modern civilization trembled in the balance, I thank a merciful God that he has given us the faith, the courage, and the power from which to mold victory. We have known the bitterness of defeat and the exaltation of triumph. And from both, we have learned there can be no turning back. We must go forward to preserve in peace what we won in war. A new era is upon us. Even the lesson of victory itself brings it profound concern, both for our future security and the survival of civilization. The destructiveness of the war potential through progressive advances in scientific discovery, has, in fact, now reached a point which revises the traditional concept of war. Men, since the beginning of time, have sought peace. Various methods through the ages have been attempted to devise an international process to prevent or settle disputes between nations. From the very start, workable methods were found insofar as individual citizens were concerned. But the mechanics of an instrumentality
of larger international scope have never been successful. Military alliances, balances of power, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blots out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we do not devise some greater and more equitable system, Armageddon will be at our door. The problem, basically, is theological and involves a spiritual recrudescence and improvement of human character that will synchronize with our almost matchless advance in science, art, literature, and all material and cultural developments of the past 2,000 years. It must be of the spirit if we are to save the flesh. We stand in Tokyo today, reminiscent of our countryman, Commodore Perry, 92 years ago. His purpose was to bring to Japan an era of enlightenment and progress by lifting the veil of isolation to the friendship, trade, and commerce of the world. But alas, the knowledge thereby gained of Western science was forged into an instrument of oppression and human enslavement. Freedom of expression, freedom of action, even freedom of thought were denied through suppression of liberal education, through appeal to superstition, and through the application of force. We are committed by the Potsdam Declaration of Principles to see that the Japanese people are liberated from this condition of slavery. It is my purpose to implement this commitment just as rapidly as the armed forces are demobilized and other essential steps taken to neutralize the war potential. The energy of the Japanese race, if properly directed, will enable expansion vertically rather than horizontally. If the talents of the race are turned into constructive channels, the country can lift itself from its present deplorable state into a position of dignity. To the Pacific Basin has come the vista of a new emancipated world. Today, freedom is on the offensive. Democracy is on the march. Today, in Asia as well as in Europe, unshackled peoples are tasting the full sweetness of liberty, the relief from fear. In the Philippines, America has evolved a model for this new free world of Asia. In the Philippines, America has demonstrated that peoples of the East and peoples of the West may walk side by side in mutual respect and with mutual benefit. The history of our sovereignty there has now the full confidence of the East. And so, my fellow countrymen, today I report to you that your sons and daughters have served you well and faithfully with the calm, deliberate, determined fighting spirit of the American soldier and sailor based upon a tradition of historical trait as against the fanaticism of an enemy supported only by mythological fiction. Their spiritual strength and power has brought us through to victory. They are homeward bound. Take care of them.
That was General of the Army Douglas MacArthur, Supreme Commander of the Allied Powers. We will now hear Fleet Admiral Chester W. Nimitz, United States Navy, the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet.
On board all naval vessels at sea and in port and at our many island bases in the Pacific, there is rejoicing and thanksgiving. The long and bitter struggle which Japan started so treacherously on the 7th of December 1941 is at an end. I take great pride in the American forces which have helped to win this victory. America can be proud of them. The officers and men of the United States Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and Merchant Marine who fought in the Pacific have written heroic new chapters in this nation's military history. I have infinite respect for their courage, resourcefulness, and devotion to duty. We also acknowledge the great contribution to this victory made by our valiant allies. United we fought, and united we prevail. The port of Tokyo, which was first opened by Commodore Perry in 1853, is now crowded with United States men of war. The process of bringing Japan into the family of civilized nations, which was interrupted when Japan launched her program of conquest, will soon begin again. Today, all freedom-loving peoples of the world rejoice in the victory and feel pride in the accomplishments of our combined forces. We also pay tribute to those who defended our freedom at the cost of their lives. On Guam is a military cemetery in a green valley not far from my headquarters. The ordered rows of white crosses stand as reminders of the heavy cost we have paid for victory. On these crosses are the names of American soldiers, sailors, and Marines. Culpepper, Tomino, Sweeney, Bromberg, Depew, Malloy, Ponziani, names that are a cross-section of democracy. They fought together as brothers in arms. They died together, and now they sleep side by side. To them, we have a solemn obligation, the obligation to ensure that their sacrifice will help to make this a better and safer world in which to live. To achieve this, it will be necessary for the United Nations to enforce rigidly the peace terms that will be imposed upon Japan. It will also be necessary to maintain our national strength at a level which will discourage future acts of aggression aimed at the destruction of our way of life. Now we turn to the great tasks of reconstruction and restoration. I am confident that we will be able to apply the same skill, resourcefulness, and keen thinking to these problems as were applied to the problems of winning the victory.
The strong alliance of Japanese and American interests evident in 2020 is testament that Admiral Chester Nimitz's optimistic words on September 2, 1945 were on target. As MacArthur and Nimitz were sharing those words, a young sailor from New York named Bob Mettauer was aboard the USS Ticonderoga. He had already survived a kamikaze attack that killed his best friend, and he would spend the next few months shuttling troops, including liberated prisoners of war, back to the United States. I bring up Bob because there's an update to the story he shared with us on Hometown Heroes almost 2 years ago. In Santa Maria, California, he's known as Bicycle Bob. When we first shared Bob's story on the radio in 2018, he had logged 95,000 miles on his bicycle, and he didn't plan on stopping until he hit 100,000. So here's your update from Bob.
Well, since then, a lot of things have happened. January 3rd, I had a terrible form. I was going out of the house to go play pinochle over in the clubhouse. I fell down, wound up in the emergency room. My left leg was twice the size of my right leg. I lost a couple of months, you know, on the bike, but I got back on. I built up, and I was doing 9 miles every day. And then I reached 100,000 on August 11th. And then they had a big, you probably saw it on television. Did you see it?
Yeah, I found that online. That was great. So are you done now, or are you going to keep going?
No, I'm going to keep going. I received a letter from somebody that saw it with a person who lived in San Ynez, and she's a runner. But anyway, she sent me this letter. The message said, "You don't stop because you get old. You get old because you stop." All right? So I figure I better not stop. Next month, I'll be 96.
I'm just glad you're back up and at it.
Yeah, well, I did, though. I slowed down. I'm only doing 5 miles a day now. But the left leg still bothers me. But, you know, it'll bother me till I go down below.
So you're going to be 96.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, how many miles do you think you can hit on the bike by the time you hit 100 years old?
Well, you know, that person that told me, you know, you don't get old because you... But anyway, she said she's going to come here on my 100th birthday. So who knows, you know, who knows what the good Lord has in store.
At hometownheroesradio.com, I have a link for you to local TV news coverage of Bob reaching his milestone, as well as all the info you need to follow the 75th commemoration of the end of World War II online. We're going to hear from the man spearheading that effort in Hawaii when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Have you ever looked at a box of old videotapes or photos and said, one of these days I'm going to do something with those? I know the feeling. But more importantly, I found the solution at VHSmaster.com. VHSmaster will take all your old VHS VHS and 8mm tapes and reels and convert them to DVDs and digital videos, ensuring that your priceless memories will last for years to come. They'll even preserve and restore photos, slides, and audio cassettes. Go to VHSmaster.com. That's VHSmaster.com and tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Loeffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes as we mark 75 years since the signing of the surrender documents that ended World War II. So much has changed in those 75 years, and the number of men and women who were involved in forging that victory that ended the world's worst conflict is dwindling daily. Tony Varicella is the executive director of the 75th World War II Commemoration Committee. He joins us from Hawaii to tell us exactly what's happening this week and how long they've been working toward the events to mark this special anniversary.
The whole things started moving about 2 years ago, because the first efforts were really to get the Congress to pass national legislation regarding the commemoration. And they did do that in early 2019, and they put it under the auspices of the Department of Defense. So it was actually passed by a bill in Congress. Our honorary co-chairs on the national level were Senators Bob and Elizabeth Dole. The Bob Hope Legacy, which is part of the Bob and Dolores Hope Foundation, became the presenting sponsor for all things happening on the mainland for this commemoration, as well as those things happening here in Hawaii. So that's how it got started in early 2019. And then the committee really took hold about a year ago, started really working on all of the efforts and plans, focused on a 5-day period from August 29th to September 2nd. And there were a whole series of events that were related to education, community, of course, bringing the warbirds here for the Legacy of Peace aerial parades, and then very special efforts and events for our World War II veterans that we had hoped would be able to join us from around the country and around the island. So that's how things really got kicked off, if you will.
Yeah, and I know how much time and how many people have invested their heart and soul into this. So I know it's difficult when some of the plans go out the window. But you just mentioned there were going to be veterans coming from all over the country. And many of those veterans are guys who've appeared on this program and shared their stories. And sure, COVID-19 just made that an impossibility. But tell us what you are doing and what people can look forward to.
Absolutely, because it's all about, you know, it's always onward and upward, as we say. Yeah, there's tons of people and organizations, both civilian, community, military, that have certainly worked tirelessly, and it's all for our World War II veterans, as you said, and our greatest generation who also served on the home front. The spirit has always been, hey, whatever turn occurs, we are going to try to make it as positive as possible. So what we are focused on is there are a number of educational efforts. We converted those primarily to virtual. There was an international leadership forum that happened in the middle of August and was very successful, with people and students from different parts of the world interfacing with our military and community leaders. There's other educational programs in the schools here, and there are exhibits and platforms that we're creating that will live on after September 2nd, so that people from around the country or the world can tap into those resources, audio histories, video clips, images and text stories and so on about the war, about the veterans, and about the civilians. So that front is still pushing forward, just becoming more virtual. We are happy that the warbirds, there's 14 of them, that were able to come over on the USS Essex, and they've been here offloaded since August 15th, and were able to, as you can probably see and your audience can see from a lot of stories around the country and beyond, they're just majestic. They're here to help honor and celebrate again our World War II veterans and greatest generation. They're going to be actively involved. There's 3 Legacy of Peace aerial parades. They will start the morning of August 29th, also on Sunday, August 30th, and then, of course, on the morning of September 2nd, which is the 75th commemoration ceremony. For those that aren't on this island, we're also going to be getting film of the warbird parades on the Saturday and Sunday, so that can be shared out there with the world. So that's a really big part of that, and it's, and in a way, as you know, it's quite symbolic, because on September 2nd, 1945, in Tokyo Bay, in addition to the signing occurring on the USS Missouri, there were a lot of other ships in the water that day, and there were 800 aircraft flying overhead. So in many ways, this is quite symbolic of that. So it's a very exciting part. The aircraft owners and pilots and mechanics and crew have worked tirelessly and for months to be here, be part of it, and to salute and honor our World War II veterans. So that's a huge part of what's happening.
And all of that, of course, we'll be able to access on your Facebook page and on the website?
Yes, absolutely. We will have up the routes and the timing of the actual Legacy of Peace aerial parades. And for those that live on Oahu here in Hawaii, the three routes collectively will ensure that anybody on this island, regardless of where they live, will be able to actually see them in the air. And then we're going to publish that out there. Any video and all that's captured, we will have links directly there for people to see. And then, of course, everything will be leading up to September 2nd, 2020, where between 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. Hawaii Standard Time, we will have the 75th World War II commemoration ceremony. That ceremony will be live streamed in many ways, but on the broadcast side, between our media partner here and the Defense Media Activity Group on the military side, the signal will be up for any broadcast group around the world to pull that down. We really want to get people around the world to tune in. This was a global conflict that ended, and the 75 years of peace ushered in certainly affected the entire world. So any media company anywhere in the world will get satellite access. For those of us that are consumers that want to view it in other ways, people just need to go to our website. And at the website, we will identify, one, there'll be a direct link. You can just click right in. The Facebook Live instructions will be right there as well. And then leading up to the second, there'll be a lot of media exposure, again, reiterating for people to be part of it, to participate, to share with others, and to always remember.
And as far as the ceremony on the Missouri on the 2nd, the very same deck of the very same ship where General MacArthur stood up and said, "Today the guns are silent," on September 2nd, 1945, what can we expect to see if people are tuning into that live stream for the actual ceremony on the Mighty Mo?
So what the folks will see between that 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. time frame is there will be a Legacy of Peace aerial parade that begins between 8:30 and 9 a.m. We'll be filming that and incorporating that directly into the live stream. The next phase of what they'll see is there are a number of ships, both U.S. and foreign, that will be in Pearl Harbor at the conclusion of RIMPAC, which is ending actually on Monday. And so a lot of those ships will be there. And so that'll be part of what people will see. There is going to be a Navy pass and review that will kick off the actual ceremony. That'll happen right around 9 a.m. Hawaii time. And then the formal program will start at 9:02. There will be a series of speakers there, including the governor of the state of Hawaii, Governor Ige, Admiral Phil Davidson, who is the commander of U.S. Indo-PACOM group, and the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, who as the keynote speaker. There will be a series of virtual methods that we are going to employ in the live stream to bring in our World War II veterans from outside of Hawaii who had hoped to be here and had planned to be here. And, of course, the difficult decision was made by all involved just this past Friday to inform them that we could not have them come at this time. So we're going to tie them in virtually. Every veteran that was going to be here will be mentioned, will share their name, their rank, their service branch. And for those that were in Tokyo Bay or on the Missouri September 2nd, we'll do a special shout out for those folks, but they will all be part of the ceremony. And our hope still is to have local World War II veterans from here in Hawaii on board. So the physical audience will be quite small, but the global audience will hopefully be quite enormous. So they're going to see a lot of different things. The Pacific Fleet Band and the Royal Hawaiian Band will be part of what is shared there. But I think the real key thing is there's a special focus of really bringing the World War II veterans, who we truly are trying to salute and honor, right into the ceremony. So that is how we have shifted gears once we knew that they weren't going to be able to physically be with us, we did not want to miss the opportunity to have them be here in some way, shape, or form in the ceremony, as well as, of course, our local World War II veterans. So that'll be the focus. But a lot of other special things will occur within the 2 hours between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m.
I hear how you guys have had to adjust in spite of all the plans you've been working on for a couple of years now. What a parallel to what happened in World War II when, you know, it started with a surprise attack. There were so many situations where if something had gone just a little bit differently, perhaps the Allies wouldn't have won, and you guys are adjusting and powering on and making sure that this is noted and these veterans are honored. Maybe you've thought about this, maybe you've had to answer this before, Tony, but why is this so important? Why does it matter that we mark this anniversary and that this story gets shared around the world?
The Greatest Generation, which included, as we said, our World War II veterans, as well as all the people, not just around the United States and around the islands here in Hawaii, but around the world, that gave everything they could and participated in one common cause in those years, and that was to end the deadliest conflict of all time. The sacrifices that people made on the battlefield and how they served on the home front are just extraordinary. Every story that you hear, every time you talk to one of these people, you can't help but be inspired and humbled at the same time, truly. And the lessons people today should certainly learn from all of them are enormous. You listen to their sacrifices, and then when you think about what people are asked in this day to fight this pandemic, it's minor what we're asking people to do today compared to all that these people have gone through, many of which, of course, gave the ultimate their entire lives. As we might remember, the estimates are somewhere between 80 and 100 million people died in World War II around the globe. We should never forget. We always have to remember what everybody did to end this conflict and to usher in 75 years of global peace and prosperity around the entire globe. I mean, nobody can ever thank or repay them enough. And we should never let anybody in any generation forget, because, you know, all of our lives would certainly have been quite different.
Yeah, if we exist at all, in some of our cases, if our fathers or grandfathers hadn't made it back, we wouldn't be here. Well said, Tony. Much appreciate your time. And I'll put the links up at hometownheroesradio.com. But one more time, for folks who are looking for you online or on Facebook, what's the best way to find you?
The official website is www.75thWorldWar2commemoration.org. And we will have everything up there so that you'll be able to find already lots of imagery, video clips, oral histories, and so on and so forth, but most importantly, how to connect to the live ceremony on September 2nd, 2020.
I know there's a beautiful silver B-25 Old Glory who I've seen before that's out there, and a PBY and an AT-6. Do you have a favorite of all the warbirds you've seen so far out there?
Not really. They're so different and unique. I mean, I think for a lot of us, the PBY adds a layer of excitement, with the landing and takeoffs from the water. You know, it's quite extraordinary. And during the attack in Pearl Harbor, there were over 30 of those PBYs were destroyed. And so to have two of them back here to participate, along with Old Glory, as B-25 and all the other aircraft, I mean, they're all special. But we're just excited that these people sacrificed what they have done in the last few months just to be part of this, because we're all doing this for the right reasons. That's for our veterans. It's for our greatest generation. And what we're going through in terms of adaptations and evolutions is really insignificant. But as long as we stay focused on saluting and honoring those people that we all should be saluting and honoring.
Amen. And on behalf of all our listeners, I just want to say mahalo nui loa to you and your committee for not throwing in the towel, for making sure this would happen some way, somehow. And I know our veterans will really appreciate it. Tony Varicella, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. And thanks to all of those folks out there listening. Please tune in please be part of it and please share it with others.
Okay, we have our marching orders. That website again, 75thwwiicommemoration.org. I have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Be ready to watch live wherever you happen to be on September 2nd. And join us again next time for a B-24 bomber pilot turned family doctor with quite a story to tell. That's all the time we have on Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.